Today, we're talking with Prudence Pitter. She's a chief HR officer with Amazon Web Services. Prudence had a lot to share with us about her journey, from the importance of building relationships that support you to the value of using transparency to build trust with your team. I hope you'll find something here to support you on your journey as Prudence shares what she'd tell herself from where she is today. Welcome to I'd Tell Myself, where we dive into the individual journeys people have taken to professional success and share some of the lessons that they've learned along the way. I'm your host, Danielle Frankel. I've long believed that there are many ways to learn the important lessons in life. And while some lessons are only gained through personal experience, others can be learned less painfully from those ahead of us on their own journey. I hope you'll find something here to support you as we ask these individuals what they tell themselves from where they now sit. Welcome, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining me today.
Yes, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. I'm so looking forward to hearing your story. As always, I'm going to ask you to start off with a few fast facts for us. So can you tell us who you are, what your job is, what your sort of career focus is?
Yes, for sure. So Prudence Pitter, I am the global head of HR for two different business lines within AWS, AWS being one of the businesses of Amazon. And I've been in the HR space for about 27 years. I have held global HR leadership roles, mostly in the hospitality space. So in hotel groups, in restaurant groups, and I've spent about 5 years in the health and fitness space. So I consider AWS my COVID job, if you will. I was led to Amazon during COVID and just about at my 3 year mark now.
That's great. I have to ask, which lines of business are you in? Because when I think of AWS, I think of computers and shopping and, you know, web backups.
Yes. So I am in Amazon Web Services, the cloud provider. So Amazon.com is the shipping portion, the warehouses, you know, the blue trucks that show up to your home. That's Amazon.com. And AWS Web Services provides the, as you mentioned, cloud backup to various organizations across the globe.
Got it. Did you always want to be in HR?
No.
Is this your dream as a small child?
No. I wanted to be an accountant when I was growing up because I was good with numbers. That was literally the reason that I gave myself. And so I started college, and I remember my first accounting class as the professor asked, what area of accounting do you want to go into? And I listened to the others responding as you're going around the room, and I thought, I don't know as much about accounting as they did. I just want to be in the numbers part. You know, they were talking about government and banking and, you know, not-for-profit. And I just didn't have that specific detail around where I wanted to be. And I was working as a bank teller while I was going to college. And I ended up fostering a relationship with the human resources department and thought that HR was a lot sexier than accounting. And that was literally my path in. I was working in what I thought was a path to get me into the right accounting role. And I partnered with the HR team within a financial organization and pivoted to HR.
Interesting. Did you have like a mentor? Was there somebody who sort of guided you through that process and that transition?
Yes. So I wish we were still in touch. So the recruiter within the organization and I became somewhat close. And the reason was tellers are high turnover roles, or was at the time, I think probably still is. And so I would connect with her regularly about employee referrals. And so I would refer individuals that I met at school or church or on the subway. And so I was constantly connecting with her. What about this person, or going to collect my bonus for referring someone who was hired and did the time? And when I talked to her about, I'm like, you know what, your office is up here on the fourth floor. You even have a window and everything. Tell me a little bit about your function. And dating myself. I already said how many years I've been in HR, but this was back when temp agencies were the thing, you know, to start a new career or to pivot, you know, you go in, you do your assessment tests, you sign up, made sure your answering machine was clear to collect the messages when they called. And she said to me, your best way to pivot into HR is to temp. So find a temp assignment and use that to gain experience. Number one, to determine if you truly like it, and then transition into HR. I took her advice literally, and I was able to. I got two temp assignments that were really, I got paid for them and I showed up for the period of time. One was 2 weeks and one was 3 weeks, but I really did nothing and I didn't really learn anything about HR. I was kind of the gatekeeper, right? The person who sat out front and screened individuals to go see the HR director for the organization. But my third assignment was one that actually was a 3 month assignment, and that was the start of my HR career.
That's great. So did you, all of this was happening while you were still doing your accounting program at school?
Yes, and I switched my major. So I switched my major to general business. I didn't switch to human resources management. It was towards the end of my degree, so maybe year three or four, probably year four, where I, you know, I had taken one or two HR courses. I'd certainly taken my psychology course. I recognized that what I was learning in the workforce and what I was learning at school was leading me to HR, but I wasn't very deliberate about saying, I want the HR degree. And so I connected with my counselor at school to say, hey, is it too late to switch to an HR degree? And it was, but I had enough credits to have a specification. So I have my bachelor's in business management with a specialization in human resources.
Got it. Nice. So when you wrapped up that 3 month temp job, you switched your degree assignment with school, you graduated, and then what did you do?
So I didn't wrap up the 3 month temp job. The 3 month temp job became a full-time job.
Aha.
So I had a similar role to the first two that I had, where I was the gatekeeper, if you will, to the HR director. The difference with this organization is it had a larger HR team. And so I sat in an era where I had visibility to the head of benefits, the head of payroll, the recruiter, and the HR generalist. The recruiter resigned during those 3 months, and I promptly marched into the HR director's office and say, I want to do her job. And he didn't think I was presumptuous. He said, well, you know, she gave 3 weeks notice. I'll have her train you and we'll see how you do. And I was like, whoa, good for me. And you know, this is awesome. It was 3 intense weeks. It was a lot more than I thought the job entailed. It wasn't about recruiting as far as reviewing resumes and matching an individual to the right job. It was that and more. So there was a training component, there was the onboarding component, and this happens to be an organization that was nonprofit and government funding. So there was a lot involved as it relates to background checks and fingerprinting, which I did physically. In the ink, rolling on the paper. Yes, I know. I go way back. But the learning was just unmatched. There's so much that I learned very quickly and continued to learn after she transitioned. The HR director was smart. He didn't have me take on her role after the 3 weeks training. He kept me in a temporary assignment. I had to prove myself over a period of time, but I was later converted to a full-time employee, and that was my first HR role.
That's great. I feel like maybe there's a question I should add to my sort of standard podcast questions, which is what unexpected skills did you gain that nobody would think you have, right? You know how to do fingerprinting. That's amazing.
Yes. And I had to do fingerprinting. I think when I did global entry a few years ago, I had to do fingerprinting. And I remember watching the fact that it's all digital. And the officer was holding my finger. I was like, nope, don't put it down yet. Not so, not hard. And I'm thinking, I know exactly what to do, but it wasn't the place to have the conversation. But it was fascinating to see now how different it is. No black messy ink. I mean, I had the wipes on the side, like each individual, depending on the size of their hands, they needed one or two wipes to kind of clean up all that black stuff off of them. But yeah, that's definitely one skill that I gained in my first HR role.
That's so funny. Just really interesting things that I don't know, they don't even work the same way anymore, right? But
No.
that's great. So you took on that role. Eventually you got moved into a full-time recruiting position, right? You did the onboarding and the training and the selection and all that fun stuff. I'm curious, having made the transition from accounting to HR, what appealed to you about it? What is it that called to you in doing this kind of work, since accounting was such a It sounds like it was something you picked because you knew you had the skill set to do it, but not necessarily such a deep interest in what was there.
Yeah, so it's twofold. One, there was the part of my accounting path to a corporate or an office job, if you will, seemed longer than the HR path. It seemed to me from my visibility that the HR path started in a more comfortable setting. So selfishly, that was a motivator. The other motivator was I worked directly with people. So I wasn't on the outskirts. I wasn't in a support role, if you will. I was working with people regularly. So I had the opportunity to work with what I would consider external customers, candidates coming into the organization, and then internal customers, the HR team that I supported, because all of our pieces blended together. But also the managers who had those roles that they needed to fill, the managers who needed HR support for one thing or another, and then the different department heads that I would interact with to ask them to be a part of the onboarding process to help employees see the different path that they could have within the organization later on. So having the ability to work more closely with people every single day meant it wasn't a boring job. And also being in an environment where I felt it to be more comfortable was also a motivator.
That's great. Yeah, there's definitely a difference in terms of how the flow of your day goes when you're working with numbers all day versus when you're working with people all day. And neither one is right or wrong, but they definitely speak to different types of personalities in a
For
meaningful
sure.
way.
Yes, I agree. I know people who would not touch my job with a long pole, and likewise.
Yes, exactly. When I worked at PwC, I was in the change management and practice, right? And so my role was entirely about the people side of how business does things. But as a huge traditionally accounting firm, right, there are people who had very number specific jobs. They did not want to be out there dealing with all the people I was dealing with on a regular basis. And it was fascinating when we all got together, for various like firm-based events to see just how many different personalities and how many different interests all aligned under that same umbrella in terms of what we offered as a firm.
Yes, it speaks to personality, but it also speaks to interests, right? And impact. I think we, not I think, I know we all have impact to our organizations and the work that we do, and we're all needed in our roles, but they're just ways as far as effectiveness. Some individuals are just more effective in different roles.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got yourself into this early HR role, into this recruiting role. Can you tell us a little bit, sort of hit the highlights on how you made it from that early recruiting role to where you are now? Some of the major transitions maybe that you went through?
Yeah, one of the major transitions after I left that nonprofit first HR role, I moved into the profit side of things in a junior role. And one of the major highlights in my career is I applied for a role that was a recruiter role. And I was still in this mindset of I am a recruiter in HR. I wasn't thinking about the broader HR. And in that interview, the head of HR who was interviewing me for the role said, I have two roles open. You applied for the recruiter role. I interviewed you. I can't hire you for that role. You are better suited for this role. And that was my first salaried role. It was my first manager role where I was managing people. And I didn't think that I was ready, but this leader who met me for an hour Based on the responses that I gave and the examples that I gave and what I had been able to do in my career, which was less than 5 years at that point, made the call that I was ready for a leadership role, that I was ready to no longer punch a clock, but to be a salaried employee. And this was before I finished my bachelor's degree because work came before school. And so, full-time night became part-time night. A 4-year degree became, a little bit longer than a 4-year degree. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, I thought you needed your degree and several years after your degree before you get a manager role. So that's definitely one that is a huge highlight for me in my career. But as you talk about highlights along the way, another highlight for me was starting my HR practice consulting. I relocated to Southern California early in my HR career, and quite frankly, I hadn't done enough research, right? No one told me that California was a country and not a state. I just assumed it's part of the United States and it's all good, right? I get to California and I started to apply for roles. So I was what you'd call a trailing spouse. And so my role wasn't the one that got us to Southern California. So we got settled and I started to look for a role. And the two things that were coming back to me as far as feedback was, you don't speak Spanish and you don't have California employment law experience. And I thought, holy moly. And at first, it just seems like specific to those organizations. And then it became a trend. And so networking has always served me well as far as in my education, in my career and education, I've balanced both of those. And I've always prioritized connecting with different organizations that are like-minded. And so I did the same in California. I didn't need Spanish or California employment law expertise to be able to connect with different groups of HR professionals and learn their stories and ways that they have managed to be successful. And through that, I was able to connect with individuals who were actually looking for HR support. So they had a function in HR department. They had a need, but they did not have a need to bring on someone full time. And so I started my HR practice. I connected with multiple organizations. I did some leadership development training. I did some recruiting. I did a little bit of organizing onboarding systems for one organization. And through that, I connected with an individual who was able to help me connect with my first full-time HR role in Southern California. So getting that consulting experience came in really handy 6 years later when I moved back to the East Coast from California. This was after 2008. So I was affected negatively in 2008. I was in the banking world and my role was affected. And I started consulting again. And I consulted for a while in Southern California, and the roles seemed to be more prevalent on the East Coast than they were on the West Coast. And so I relocated back to the East Coast and was able to kind of build that consulting muscle again for a different reason, but on a different side of the country. I remember being in restaurants, and most of my career had been in hotels. And I was in a restaurant HR role, and I was having a one-on-one with one of my employees. And he said to me, "I admire you so much." And I was like, "Ooh, thank you." To hear an employee say that and to hear a male say that to a female, it took me back a little bit. I was his manager, so I imagined there was some admiration, but for him to pause in the one-on-one and really say that, it just meant so much. And I was like, "Well, share more. Why did you choose to share that now?" And he said, "You get so much respect from the other leaders. How do you get that respect?" And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, early in my career, I received feedback on one, being very head down at my computer in my office, and getting the work done and coming out, kind of only as necessary. And I remember later in my career getting feedback that you're always in your office, you don't get to know people, you get the work done, but we really don't know you. And so I took that to heart. And throughout my career, I made sure that I connected with individuals and that I got to know them and that I understood their communication style, made sure they understood mine and also their motivation and what are their expectations of HR. Because I started in HR when HR was really personnel and viewed as the policy keeper and viewed as kind of the principal's office, where HR has transitioned to human resources and the people department and really focused on employee well-being and overall development and the employee as a whole individual and not so much about policy and not so much about managing the picnic or the holiday party, but more so about career development and what are employees needing to be whole today and in the future. And so I use that as a teaching opportunity to share that building relationships is so important and has really served me well as far as being able to gain respect from others and to be able to have the opportunity to be influential by meeting people where they are. So that one really resonated with me to hear an employee share that. Another highlight that I'll mention before I hand back them, if you will, is transitioning from Amazon.com to Amazon Web Services. So I was hired as part of a program within Amazon to be a regional HR leader over anywhere from 3 to 8 fulfillment centers. And I was hired as the head of HR for one fulfillment center to be in that role for 9 to 18 months and then transition to the real role that I was hired for, if you will. I very quickly realized that the way the fulfillment center HR department runs didn't resonate with the type of HR work that I enjoy doing. So there's a lot of focus on metrics, and I really enjoy focusing on people. There's a lot of focus on the operations within that site and how that operations run, and HR more as a support, where I'm used to being a partner with the business and truly learning the business and being there hand in hand and step by step. And in doing so, being able to be more effective as an HR leader by learning how the business runs and what motivates the leaders and the business as a whole. And so I certainly didn't want to exit Amazon quickly. I didn't want to be the person who leaves Amazon. And I networked and I connected with individuals who helped me transition just 10 months in over to Amazon Web Services. So individuals who are within Amazon recognize that's definitely not the norm and it's not easy to do. But because of the career that I've held, because of my transparency, and because of recognizing that I wanted to do something different and connecting with the right individuals, I was able to do that and to be in a role where I'm supporting leaders in a partnership role and doing the type of HR work that I enjoy.
That's amazing. Those are some really great sort of pivotal moments from your career. And there are a few things I would love to dive into.
Hey, if you're enjoying the show, please make sure to subscribe and join our community at idtellmyself.com for updates and info. That's idtellmyself.com. Okay, back to the show.
So the first one, if you will indulge me, is I have some questions for you about how you learn to manage, right? A lot of the work that I do is around manager training and leadership development. And I'm of the philosophy that we manage work and we lead people. And most people that I've spoken to over the years have interesting stories about how they ended up in management positions, how they learned how to express their own leadership in the world. How did that work for you? Did you get any training? You know, it sounds like the person that hired you into the second role when you went to be a recruiter and they said, you know, no, but I think you're ready for this management role, right? They saw something in you. But were you given any support or training to make that transition, or did you just jump into the deep end?
Yeah, a ton of support for that position. This leader was being positioned for a regional role, and she was grooming me to take over her role. And I didn't realize that at first, but she ensured that she taught me everything that she knew and that she gave me the hard feedback regularly and openly. So this was a leader that said, "You spend too much time in your office. The work is important, but the relationships are as important." And I took that to heart. So I got really good training. I used that for that role. I did not take those learnings with me initially. And what I mean by that is because I consulted for a period of time, I was my own boss. I was more of a fly-by HR person in different organizations. And so I didn't consider myself, and I was not the leader that I needed to be later on in life. So one of my first missteps later on, when I had a regular full-time role and I had a team, was to not remember how I was groomed for the role that I was in, and to focus on the deliverables and not the person. And that resulted in me getting feedback in a different way now from my direct report, saying, "Why is it that all your emails have ASAP in them? Is there anything that I've given you late?" That was really eye-opening for me. It's like, ouch, huh? And it was very clear to me that that was not my intent, and that was not something that I would appreciate if my manager was doing the same. But I wanted to encourage urgency even when there was not urgency. So getting that feedback was really important to me, and it allowed me to reset. The other thing too was how I worked, right? The fact that it was important to me to be in the office really early, and it was important to me to take a short lunch and to be as late as I could until it was time to go do pickup. I wasn't role modeling balance. I wasn't role modeling well-being. And I recognized that I was starting to feel that my employees weren't working as hard as I was because of the hours that they did, which were the hours that were needed for the role. And so through working with an executive coach, I was fortunate enough to have an executive coach that was hired by the organ that was paid for by the organization that I worked with. And through those biweekly meetings, I said, I want to do well, right? Like, I want HR to be viewed in a positive light. I really want to be successful. But there's this rub, there's this tension in the department. I'm not kind of getting the type of vibe that I want on the team. I'm not getting the feeling that I'm fostering the type of work environment on my team that I'm encouraging the other leaders to do on theirs. And we were able to do some good work. I was able to transition how I work, reset expectations in team meetings and one-on-ones, and able to have a department where I had employees who were speaking with me more openly. Our team meetings were a lot more free-flowing. They were not tense. Interactions in the office when I walked into the other area of the office was a lot more friendly and inviting. And it took a little bit of recognizing that something needs to change, and I don't have the skills to change it. What do I need to do in getting the help that I needed?
That's amazing. I mean, both the brave employee that sort of put that question in your face about the ASAP thing, but also that you were open, right? That you were open to realizing that the team didn't have the culture that you were encouraging other leaders to have, and that at the core, like, you needed to change some things in the way that you were approaching things, instead of sort of pushing that out to the team and assuming that it was their fault, which I think is so often, unfortunately, what happens when we're not happy with our team culture.
Yeah. And I use that as teachable moments now when I talk to other leaders. You know, when a leader comes to me and says, "I'm having this issue and I really need your guidance," it's usually an issue that they have watched for a period of time. And I know that because I've lived that, right? So I recognize that there was tension in the department. I recognize that the atmosphere and the culture wasn't one that was as good as it needed to be. But I didn't take the first step to ask the hard questions and to make sure that I am getting the team to a better place. And that employee, to your point, being bold and firm and direct and sharing that was the opening that I needed to be able to have more conversations and broader conversations and change the way that I work. So later on in my career, I made sure that I did the opposite, right? And recognize when there are potential issues that are brewing and recognize when there are ways that I needed to change, but also recognize when I could be perceived in a certain light by my team and share what's in my control and what's not, right? So not all employees are always going to be happy with me as a leader, right? And so sharing what I control, what I can control and what I cannot, sharing timelines for different parts of the business that are difficult, and asking for a little bit of grace and getting employees on the journey as far as what is to come and this being a rough patch and we'll get through it. It helps build that psychological safety that you mentioned, and it also helps to build trust.
It sounds like, the transparency that you mentioned earlier in our conversation, right? That was one of the key tools that really helped you to shift the way that you're approaching your team and the tone that you were setting with them.
Yeah, for sure.
Are there any sort of other key buckets or tools that you would point to as making a really big difference? Because I imagine that was not an easy transition.
No, it was not. For me, it was one of those look in the mirror moments and accepting that change was needed, and also accepting that I was fortunate enough to have a mentor coach to help me through the transition, but also recognize that that would not always be the case, even in that role, but certainly in the future. And what are some of the other ways that I'd be able to get the resources that I need to continue to be successful? So I very much enjoy being a part of an HR network. And regardless of which role I am in, at what level, I ensure that I'm connected with other HR professionals that I can lean on, that, call a friend moment. And not always about how do I do this in my work, but how do I overcome this challenge? So it's more of a bigger conversation around, have you faced something like this before, and how have you overcome it? Of course, there are times when there are calls about what system works really well for you because our, time clock system is not the greatest. But many times the calls are about, I'm having a leadership transition. This is some of the things that I'm seeing. Am I thinking about this correctly? Or I have this individual on my team. I am convinced something is wrong. These are the ways I've tried to get to the bottom of it, and I've not had success there. So having that phone a friend and that really solid network has helped me at times, whether or not I've had an executive coach that I am working with. The other thing too is I continue to be a continuous learner. So I continue to ensure that I am reading, I'm watching TED Talks, I'm listening to podcasts, I'm doing different things to stay fresh on what is most important in leadership, in employee well-being, in overall HR, and using those learnings as part of the way I lead and the way I support the businesses that I support.
That's great. Yeah, that continuous learning mindset, always taking in new things, is helpful. I think regardless of what you're up to, what job you have, what industry you work in, wherever you are in life. I want to go back for a second because I love what you were saying about the networking piece. You mentioned it a few times in terms of how you found jobs or how you shifted roles. For example, with an Amazon, when you found the role you were in wasn't really the best fit for you. And I think when people talk about networking, that's often what they are pointing to, right? Is how do you get in the door? But what is rarely talked about, and I've heard it from a number of people in leadership positions that I've worked with from a coaching perspective, is that leadership positions tend to be really lonely places, right? It's not a role where you get a lot of actual support, right? The work gets done, but as a human being, you don't get a lot of actual support. And it's not a role where you're supposed to, or where you're allowed to show a lot of vulnerability, right, around knowing how to do your job and being the expert. And so, the significance for me and what you're pointing to around having this network where you can phone a friend, and it's not a function of finding a new job. It's, have you ever experienced this? Can I be vulnerable with you about something that I'm struggling with? Can we brainstorm together in some way? It's such an important aspect of networking that I think we sort of just fly over so quickly, especially when we're coaching young people around. How do you get a job? How do you build a career? How do you, right, do this thing? Oh, go network. Yeah.
No, you're right. I wish I knew how I started networking and prioritized it throughout my career. I don't have a kind of entry point to speak to, but I have lots of success stories as it relates to being able to connect with a network. And you're right, to the point of being a lonely place. I've been in HR roles where I'm HR of one temporarily or based on what the organization has done. And certainly at the times that I've consulted, it has come in really handy because as I went into different organizations that were different industries that I hadn't worked in before, or different states or different cities and different employee populations, and kind of have those one-offs, having the opportunity to connect with others and ask those what many times are simple questions, but important for me to get to the bottom of, that has really proven to be helpful.
Yeah. I'm curious, in the context of networking and the rest of your story, it sounds like there are some really wonderful people who've shown up throughout your career. Is there an example or two that you can think of where somebody showed you an unexpected kindness that shaped your next steps, that somehow set you on a different path, that was a pivotal moment for you in some way?
Yeah, so I had a role where I was, and then this unexpected kindness came about where it was positioning me in a different place than I thought was the right place for me to go. So I was in a role that was intended to be temporary, and there was another role that would be available for me at the end of that period of time. And one of the leaders that I was working with, as I got closer to start that transition, pulled me aside and shared why taking on that role was not the best next thing for my career. One, I thought that was very kind, and I found that out much later. Two, the reason was because that role was not going to be as long-term, and that leader had more visibility into that function than I did. And quite frankly, probably shouldn't have shared that with me, right? So he didn't share the reasons, but he shared, this is not the best role for you. And he did so at the same time as he was introducing me to a headhunter who had a more senior role for me in a similar industry, but that stretched me and put me in a very different place and set me up for success in that role, but success later on as well. And I still connect with that leader, and I feel so grateful that he, even though he'd only known me for a few months, took it up on himself to not only share with me that he wouldn't recommend that I take that on. And this is an individual who had been with the organization for years. So I knew enough to listen and to recognize that the motivation could only be good. But even more so when there was an introduction to an individual who had a more senior role ready for me. So I thought that was unbelievably kind. I also had another leader who was unbelievably kind as it relates to my well-being. And he would start every one of our weekly one-on-ones with a personal check-in, and a serious personal check-in, not a, how are you doing today? And he set the groundwork for me, and he let me know how he would be doing it. But how's your sleep? How's your diet? How's your exercise? So how are you taking care of you? So before we started any work, there was this check-in on those things. And he had asked some questions early on as I started in the organization. And I had shared that these things were important to me and at times were struggles, right? So it's this up and down, as with most individuals. And he was and considers himself to be a role model as it relates to all three of those areas, and wanted to be that accountability partner for me. I don't think he was very deliberate in saying that or in thinking in that way, but I talk about him often. We still keep in touch, and I share with other leaders how much, number one, I miss that because I'm not in that organization anymore, but how much I encourage other leaders to do the same, because those are three very important things to our overall well-being. and how much it forced me to have good stories to tell, right? So knowing that every Thursday at 11, I am going to have that check-in. What am I going to share? I'm going to be honest, but how many stories am I going to tell of how I fell off the wagon versus how many stories am I going to tell of how I really knocked it out of the park? And it shapes how I encourage others to be well-being champions even today. It shapes how I focus on ways that I need to be better about taking care of myself and focusing on my own well-being, and how I encourage others to be similar role models to him and how he's been kind to me.
That's amazing. You mentioned earlier on that you are attentive now to both people's communication styles and also what interests them, right? What drives them. So it's great to sort of see how those pieces have shown up throughout your career, how some of them were modeled for you, some of them were provided through feedback, and that sounds like some of them were hard lessons, but some of them were enjoyable lessons to pick
Yeah,
up along the way as well. It's a whole collection of things.
for sure, for sure. I think there were more hard lessons than enjoyable lessons initially, but definitely great lessons that have shaped and continue to shape me.
Yeah. And you talked about how you speak with a lot of other leaders and you do coaching along the way. And I know, I'm sure that that's part of your role at AWS, but you also do public speaking now. Is that right?
I do.
What do you like to go out and talk to people about?
I love to talk about employee well-being, and I love to talk about the real stories that take place and how to move past those. I love to share with leaders how they can be role models for well-being and how important it is to recognize that we are all a whole being, right? So we work and personal blend from time to time. And leaders recognizing that will set themselves, the organization, and employees up for success. But that all starts with getting to know employees, being vulnerable yourself as leaders, and ensuring that you're setting the stage to give employees the opportunity to be themselves, to be whole, and to feel that they have an outlet and they have much needed support. Because there are a lot of people who need a lot of support, and we spend a lot of time at work. So if we're able to, number one, get grace at work, but also to get support that helps us with life overall, it just makes for a stronger organization and, quite frankly, a stronger world.
That's wonderful. I love how you've taken the lessons from earlier in your career, the pieces that I'm sure were painful and hard to learn, as you said, right? In terms of how you show up with people and how you set the culture and the transparency and the trust and all of that. And you've not just utilized it for yourself, but you found ways to model it and to give it back to others who are still working on those lessons. It's really a wonderful cycle to the way that you're using what you've learned for good in the world.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I enjoy hearing others how they are making a difference and the ways in which they are showing up and how they are teaching and showing different ways for us to ensure that we're focused on people, right? Like we all have a job to do, and but there are people who are doing those jobs, and they all have a story and a background, and they all need a little bit of grace and a little bit of support every now and then.
Yes, absolutely. You also have a podcast, right, where you give people good advice?
I do. So I have a leadership podcast. So Purim Services is the name of the consulting firm that I had the California chapter and the New York, Connecticut chapter, if you will, at different stages throughout my career. And during COVID, I started a podcast because there are various leaders that I've worked with who would reach out every now and then for free advice to have a question every now and then. And so I knew that I was learning a ton during COVID that I wanted to share. And I also knew that there was a lot of information and things were shifting in how leaders lead, and I wanted to have the opportunity to put that out there. So I started the podcast then. And then later on, I restarted it, if you will, to focus on leadership topics. So I wanted to write 10 articles within 10 weeks and record 10 podcasts. And so I did that. And then as I listened to those podcasts, I recognized where I missed some nuggets along the way. So I did spin-offs for a while. And then starting last week, I launched season 4, which is now the Peer Services Leadership Role Model podcast that's focused on well-being and really focused on leaders, how leaders can be role models for employee well-being.
That's awesome. So we'll link all that stuff in the show notes so people can find you if they're interested. But it's amazing that you have this wealth of knowledge that you've gathered, not just from books, but really from your own lived experience and, both pleasantly and hard-won lessons. And you're making it available, right? It's not locked behind a paywall. Like, it's on your podcast, it's available in your public speaking, and people who are part of your team, I guess, at AWS have access to you for all of that great stuff too. That's
Yeah.
awesome.
Thank you.
I will wrap us up here with my standard goodbye question, which is, you've shared a lot of the really great lessons you've learned along the way. If you could go back at any point and share something with yourself that you maybe didn't know at the time, what is it that you tell yourself from where you are now?
I would tell myself that it's okay to slow down. The mistakes that I've made throughout my career have almost always been tied to the need to move fast, to get it done, to show that I can get it done and I can get it done quickly. And sometimes, especially as it relates to people, pausing, doing a little bit more research, slowing down, and slowing down sometimes to check emotions and just let things settle really make a big difference. I take that to heart now whenever I get a Slack message or an email that lands anywhere that gives any sort of a negative emotion. I make sure I don't respond right away. And sometimes I physically walk away and come back. Sometimes I sleep on it. And because it has some sort of effect, it keeps bubbling in. And so in my mind, I'm thinking of multiple responses. That's not always possible in everything that we do to always slow down and pause. Sometimes you need to respond in the moment. But the big advice that I would give my younger self is, give yourself an opportunity to pause. You'll do better work. The outcome will be better most times. And you'll save yourself some back and forth, and you'll be a little bit more thoughtful.
Absolutely. That's great advice. I think most of us would benefit from that advice. Well, thank you so much
Thank
for joining me
you.
today. It's really been a
Good to be
pleasure
here,
hearing about
Carol.
your journey.
Yes, I appreciate being here. Thank you.
That's it for today. I hope you enjoyed the show and found something to support you wherever you are on your own journey. Don't forget to subscribe where you listen to your podcasts and head over to idtellmyself.com to sign up for updates. Until next time, take care.